Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. It's podcast time. And this week, second time on the podcast, which is amazing to me. It makes me really happy. You can probably tell in my voice. I've only had one other person on this podcast twice, and that was Born Dirty. And this one is Harvey McKay. Harvey, not so long ago, released an album called Anatomy of a Drum Machine. His music, he's always been on my radar as an amazing producer. Lovely guy as well, but over the last year, I've really just been like mind blown from his productions. Absolutely amazing. And this album is a trip. It's so good. So thought I'd get him on the podcast. Had a really good chat with him. Loved it. So without further ado, Harvey McKay. Harvey McKay, what's cooking, man?
How you doing, mate?
Yeah, really good. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Not bad.
You are the... only the second person to do a second podcast on here.
Oh, really? Am I that honored?
No, thank you for coming on, man. It's it's a pleasure to get you on, and you've come up in conversation quite a lot over a few podcasts. And can we turn that off?
Yeah. Turn them off on the phone, mate. Come up on that. Jeez, that's a computer. Quit.
If anybody knew the rigmarole that we just took to try and get onto this Zoom conversation, it was ridiculous.
That was a computer, not the phone. Right, sorry, let's go.
You've been busy. You've had a lot going on. Released an album, Anatomy of a Drum Machine, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
Unneeded Pains. You've been sick. You've been in hospital. You've had a lot going on for yourself. You've been working freaking hard on music, and it's been nice to see. But how's life?
Yeah, not bad, man. Just it's nice to be back out touring and be busy again and kind of find a new focus with music and kind of find my path a wee bit, if you kind of get what I mean. I've always felt slightly outside of what's going on in a way, and even the sort of early Drum Code records that kicked things off in the past, they were always quite different from what was in there. But I feel I always kind of had my toe in a certain thing, whereas I think the past while I've just went, okay, you know. And I think a lot of us with certain genres that are going on just now are a bit like, what's kind of going on? And I really couldn't find where I was fitting in anyway, and I just thought, completely ignore what's going on and just do what you love. And it's been one of the most amazing things that's ever happened to me, really. I've really musically come into my own. And it's been quite an amazing wee journey.
Yeah, I want to go back to that feeling of when you're like before you kind of found your own way, and where you were like you had your toe in a little bit, but you were kind of in and out. Like, how did that feel as an artist? Like, what was that kind of, what were you going through in that part of your life?
I was never really that comfortable, and I was never really that happy with what I was doing. I always enjoyed my music in a way, but I just felt like I wasn't being quite true to myself, you know? There was part of me that would look at some other people that were doing other things and go, oh, like, I'm kind of in this area, and I'm not sure if I want to be in this area, you know? So, yeah, it was always quite tricky. There was always a feeling of just being slightly uncomfortable of where I was and what I was doing. Even though I was loving what I was doing, it was like slight compromise in a way, you know?
Yeah, I guess when you're compromising your sound just to get gigs or just to fit on a record label or just to do something because everyone else is doing it, it's weird because we're in this industry where you're told to not fit in a box, but you almost have to fit in a box to fit to get anywhere to a certain extent, which is weird, right? Like, because, like, let's say for instance with like your drum code stuff, I love your drum code stuff. Like Black Dolphin is still one of my favorite records, and I still play it a lot.
It's one of the ones I still really enjoy playing myself. But that track was when I think I was starting to kind of dip my toe and coming, sort of using the same term, but coming back out of that phase. That was me starting to go, oh, wait a wee minute. I was starting to find my feet. It took me a long time.
Yeah.
But, and when you say I wasn't compromising to get on a certain label or to do whatever, I think I was being caught up in what was going on and what was, I've never went, I'll do this to get this. I've always, I would say I was, compromise is maybe the wrong term. I was caught up in what was happening and what was the things that were going on and what direction things were going. And now it's like, fuck all that. This is what I love doing. Like, what it was, so see how the way, the direction a lot of things are going just now is not exactly my cup of tea. And as I say, that was like a cold, hard moment of, well, there's no way I can be involved in that.
Yeah.
And I just kind of thought, what do I love? What's the sounds that I love? And then I thought, it was like all the sort of mid to early 2000s, all the James Holden stuff. And then I started listening to lots of Aphex Twin. And that really, really sparked my brain sonically. And I think once I figured out what I loved, then I had to really go back to the drawing board and learn how to make all of that stuff sonically. And it was going back to, like, really going back to it. And I think I've spoke to you about this before. Like, I mean, I would usually use, like, some synthesizers, some loops, and a wee bit of this, and a bit of drum machine, and some samples. And then once I started buying, like, some bits of hardware and just really getting into like drum machines and building everything from scratch. And like a lot of my stuff, it's got no presets on it. You can't save anything on it. And it sounds like a bad thing, but it's the best thing that's ever happened to me because I can't just load anything up.
Yeah.
But it's got to that way now that there's been songs where people almost won't even notice where I've had to do demos, like for a YouTube, for like an Insta for a thing, for a release. And I've not had any, I've lost the song.
Yeah.
And I've just gone and go, right, two songs, a pulse, bum, bum, bum. And I'm sure I did the drums on that. And I can rebuild it.
Yeah.
And I think having that understanding of your equipment, I used to say this in the past, it's like, do you know when you learn to drive a car and you're driving a car at the beginning and you're kind of like going along the road going, oh, and the driving instructor's going, turn left. You're like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Right? But then by the end of it, you're like,
yeah.
You're in control of the car, right?
Yeah.
You're in control of the car. And so when you're in control of the equipment, it's like you can really direct where you want to go. And I think that's what's got me into this place now where it's like when I write music, it's like literally, and I'm speaking to a lot of people just now and I've got a point to talk about. I think a lot of the people are struggling just now because I think sometimes their focus is on a lot of other stuff like you have to do with social media and stuff just now, and a lot of their creative energy is going on that rather than the music. But I think see, since I started doing that, I can't stop writing music. I mean, every time I sit down, it's just... And I think it's because I'm creating every single sound I want from scratch rather than trying to find inspiration. I'm making inspiration. And yeah. I think that's been a pivotal difference recently.
Because I guess when... Before you got to where you're at, what would you do when... What would be your kind of, like, normal day of making music? How would that compare to what it is now?
Well, the thing is, it would be a mixture of just, like, playing about with, like, a little wee drum loop, chopping it up, and maybe having some parts in the drum machine, and then maybe looking for a nice preset, but then changing it and tweaking it, and then, oh, that's a nice pad there, and I'll load that into a sampler and make some chords off it and stuff like that. But it was relying on me finding some nice sounds for inspiration. Everything was always loaded into the keys and played. There was nothing that was just used. But whereas now, it's like I'll sit down and I'll fire up like the 909 and I'll be like, bang, 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 bang. And then I'll go into like one of my synths and I'll start jamming away. And all the songs that they really start, and that's one of the things I've discovered, I think I've always been sort of decent in melody, but recently once I started really getting into the keys, and it's not like I'm good in the keyboard, but I think I've got a mind for figuring out what makes a really interesting note jump to the next one.
Yeah.
But it's all came from everything from scratch. Turn it on and dum dum dum, rather than get on and looking for a sound to get the inspiration to go somewhere. And that's the big change that's been in for me.
Do you think limitations has helped? Because when you're on a hardware synth and when you're on a drum machine,
I think it's not limitations. I think it's the opposite. I think when you use stuff that has already got some sort of sonic basis to it, I think that's where the limitations are. Because I think if when you're opening up a drum machine and a synthesizer, that can become anything if it's sounds that already have a bass in them somewhere. Maybe if it's a patch and a synth, but say you find a really nice sample and you want to chop it and play it and pitch it or whatever, or a wee loop that you want to use, that's only got so many ways you can twist that, and it's still got the base of what it is. But if it's a synthesizer or something that you're loading up from scratch, so one of the ones I'm talking about, that can be anything you want it to be if you know how to make it be anything you want it to be.
I think the thing that I'm saying with limitations is that you're using two bits of gear, whereas you can do anything with it. But like when you're like, I can only speak for myself, but when I'm trying to find inspiration in the studio, I'm like going to everything and trying to find stuff from everywhere. And when you have two pieces of equipment, you're like, okay, I have a kick drum, I have a drum machine and I have to use this. And then I have one synthesizer and I have to use this. And it's more so like, I'm not going out of these parameters. I've got two things to concentrate on. Whereas when I'm not looking at those things, it's like, well, I can get a vocal from here, I can go on YouTube, I can get a sample from here, I can go here, I can go here. And it's like, is there any real... There's no real limitations with that. And I don't know if that's... From what I'm getting at, the vibe with you is that the limitation of telling yourself you're only doing stuff on hardware and you have only a certain amount of synths, whereas like how many plugins do you have on your laptop compared to how many synths you have? Like how many effects do you have on your computer compared to how many effects do you have hardware wise? Like, do you feel that is the case or not?
No, I think that's a really good point. I think having, and like it's the same like with my setup, I have very limited plugins. I have maybe three or four that I use for the synths, and I'll tend to use them for like strings and leads and stuff, like high-ender leads, like all the bass, I'll use the hardware from the drums. And I don't just only use hardware, but a lot of the sounds that are the foundations will come from the hardware, and then there'll be some VSTs I'll use. But there's some VSTs that I use that I find, as I say, for pads and strings and stuff that are so good, man, they're so close, that I've had some synths that I've bought, and I've compared them, and I'm like... That's too close. I have to sell it and get something else that's not as close. Like I love the Tao stuff. See the Tao stuff?
Tao's so good.
And it's so cheap. Yeah. It's so cheap. It's like 60 quid or something the like Juno one, and that's an outstanding one. Mm. I've used that in loads of my songs. That's like the lead in the cocoon coming up, not the bass, but there's like a really weird sort of off-key string that comes in at the bass, and I used it in my release with Gregor Tresher as well, you know. But this stuff's brilliant. But I think, and to what you're saying, the sort of limitations of only having like a few plugins that you use and a few synths that you use, and really learning to use them really, really well. Because I found like I got there's a couple of other bits that I got for the studio, and I've not really used them as much as I would like to, but I will. But to be honest, it's because I think I'm just still really trying to learn the stuff that I've had for a year or two, you know. Like every now and again they'll surprise me and I'm like, I've never thought I would have got that out of that, you know.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing machines. I'll be honest, all of my hardware I use for like one thing each time. So like each synth I use for like one thing. Like my drum machines, I don't ever use the kick drums. I only use the like rides and the hats for them.
I've heard that in one of your other interviews. Yeah. You love the hi-hats on it.
Yeah, and like my Moog, I only generally use for bass lines, and then the Minilog I use for like pads and things like that. And like these things are just like I never use them anymore, but it's weird because I wrote one record off this little thing. With anybody that's listening, it's the SH09, the Roland, which is the Roland before the SH101, so it doesn't have MIDI, it's CV. For anybody that doesn't know what CV and MIDI is, they're signals of how to kind of communicate between systems. I wrote my record 8-bit on there, which is like an old it was an old record that I made years ago, and I'm like, I've made a record on that now, I don't need to use it again, it's done its thing.
But the thing is though, mate, see, sometimes if you get one big record off it, it's worth the purchase. For me it is. There's one that I bought, and I've got a couple of sort of records out of it that I think are nice records, but then I've got like one record out of it that I think is going with DJ Hell.
Nice.
And it's like a stonker of a record. And I remember when I made it, I thought, if that's all I ever get out of you, that's fine. That's fine.
And I think that's the thing. It's like, when I'm using hardware, I try to keep like a Will Clark sound, but I'm also like, I don't want to make every record sound the same.
Yeah.
But when I want to talk about Anatomy of a Drum Machine. Like, what was the process for you when you, from like start to before you even finished, like did you have a concept in your head? Did you write things down? Or was it like you got in the studio, you're like, I want to write an album, let's do it? Because I know the album was written for a while before it came out.
Yeah, well, it was a few of the finishing touches towards the end, but the majority of it was wrote reasonably quickly, but we were just deciding to wait to put it out to things were a bit more alive. Basically what it was, I'm good pals with Alex and Denson Peter, and I've been sending him bits and bobs, and we'd signed a few EPs, and I just kept sending him stuff, and he's like, man, said, every single thing you send me, I love. And then I'm like, he's like, why don't you just do an album? And I'm like, okay, what about this, what about that? And he went, do whatever you want. So like, okay, well, what about this? And he said, I'll put out whatever you want, just give me it. And then, as I say, it was just, I wanted to make something. So when I made the album, it wasn't to be, because I was already in that mindset of nothing to do with coming out and being this. It was like a kind of passion project of doing something that was a kind of proper album from start to finish, not just an album with like 10 smashers and two ambience. I wanted some really different tracks in there. And it really let me experiment, and I learned so much on that album, doing that album. And like the feedback for it's just been like insane. Like, see some of the people that have messaged me, like left field, get back to me, because they've been supporting some of he'd been supporting some of my, some of my releases and like chatting them and stuff. So I tapped him up on Twitter and I said, oh, listen, it's going to be out in a while, but if you want a little listen. And then he replied in a few days, and he's like, holy shit, that's just blown me away. And I'm like, and then, was it the other day, It's like, do you know the Hardway Bros? It's the guy Sean Johnson who, him and Andrew Weatherall did the From Love With Outer Space kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're ever looking for any mixes, right, there's a guy called Sean Johnson, Hardway Bros, and his mixes are just outstanding, right? Yeah. They're like all that kind of slow 110 stuff, 3 to 4 hours long. That's all I ever listen to at the back garden. It's just outstanding music selection. And I think I'd hit him up a wee while ago or something about something I thought might fit one of his sets or whatever. And then, as I say, it was only like a week, a couple of weeks ago or whatever, and I just got a message from him saying, album absolutely astounding from start to finish.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so guys like that, that really, really know their music, that's the kind of stuff I was aiming for, really quality from start to finish with loads of different tastes and feeling in it, you know?
You definitely achieved that. It's really weird because it's... It's a techno album, but, and I don't usually like to listen to like full on techno albums, if I'm honest. Like, I'm usually more of like, I want to hear some songs. I want to hear a bit of everything. And although you've done a bit of everything, like, it's majorly a techno album, but there's something about it because it's so melodic, but it's not melodic in what you would class as trance or what everyone's doing at the moment with techno, where it's like melodic-y techno and kind of it's practically trance. Like, it's not, it's like fucking chunky records that just, they just sound amazing. And
thank you.
And it's like, anybody that's listened to this podcast, you have to go and listen to it after you've finished here, or even just stop listening to this and go and listen to the album. But like, It truly sounds, I'm trying to dig in as an artist side and kind of for anybody else that's trying to write an album, there it sounds like there is one like straight line to the end. It's a journey album, but it sounds like you've said, okay, this is the sound I'm going for, and the whole album's going to kind of be based around a sound. Mm-hmm. Was that done purposely?
100%.
Yeah.
I knew exactly how I wanted to break it up. I knew what I wanted for the intro, like right away. Like the intro, I had done a track called Sequence 4, I think it was, which had come out then Speaker Right Away. And there was a wee story to that. It was like, it was actually when I'd made the track, I always remember messing about with it. And it was like one of my good friends, Gary Beck. Mm. Sadly, he did a dog, and his dog get sick quite young and passed away. And I remember when I was writing that tune, and I remember it was so sad at that time for what was going on, and I really felt for him. And I remember when I was listening to that track, it's like so emotively powerful. And then I remember cutting a lot of the drums and all that out. I thought, I'd love to do like an instrumental of that. And that's why, if you look at it, it's called For Riley, and that's his wee dog.
Okay.
So, but I knew when I heard that, I thought, that'd be a great track to start because it's so emotional and so big. And then like the first track just come in and just slap you in the face after that. So it's like trying to catch you off guard as well.
Mm.
There's like lots of tracks where it's tracks where you wouldn't expect. And I've got so many messages from people saying, I did not expect that from you, but I love it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I was aiming for.
But I think that's the whole point of an album, right? Is that you're allowed to do what the fuck you want, and you're allowed to, because I think it's so easy as in the industry that we're in. I don't know what it's like to be in like a band or like make pop music or something like that, but like we're kind of expected to write bangers every time we release a single, right? And it's kind of hard to release something that's not a banger, because the way a lot of us kind of have any success is we write a banger, every DJ's playing it, and then you get booked because of your records. Whereas if you make this like emotive, ambient-y, stringy record that doesn't have any kick drums that no one can play, it's like, well, that there has zero point in that, if you know what I mean. Like, there's no, which is really weird to say, but there's no like business side to that, apart from you're just writing music, which then goes into what you were saying beforehand about social media and everything like that, and kind of the art, the being the artist of what is an artist today, when you were writing the album, were you worrying about social media? Were you worrying about the other side of the business apart from writing the album?
No, to be honest, this is one of the things I think people are starting. I think people have always sort of made decisions for one thing and for the other, but I think people are maybe starting to make decisions for the wrong goals. Mm. And I feel the music industry, it's like people feel they'll be doing a certain thing just to, because they're scared of gigs or visibility or feedback or visibility. Mm. And I feel that people are starting to make decisions that are not following who they are as an artist.
Yeah.
And I think with a lot of it, if you look at a lot of the music that's coming out, you can see the quality of it. And don't get me wrong, there is so many amazing artists out there. Mm. There is. Yeah. But you see, generally, and I think a lot of people you speak to, the actual quality of the music is tanking. And mm. I think it's because a lot of people are going, well, that's safe to do. Mm. But it's not what they want to do. And it comes out because their soul's not in it, you know? And I don't know where that's going to take us. That was the part where, like, for me, this is a bit of a make or break time because, like, I got to that point and I could see the writing in the wall and I went, I can't be part of that. You know, do you know what it kind of reminds me of a bit? Like, the way things are going. Have you seen the movie The Big Short?
Yeah.
Right? The music scene I watched that and I was like, at the end, I was like, whoa. Because it's a bit like what people are doing at the moment. They're going for short-term gains, but it's almost, you watch what's going on in the scene and you're like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And, yeah. But at the same point in time, they're trying to put food on the table and they're trying to keep touring. And I get that. But where's the artistry? Mm. And where's the music? And in the long run, I think that's what people are going to crave. Because I think one of the things that's happened during the pandemic with COVID and all that is, if you weren't really good in social media, and if you were really good in social media, I think as things open back up, people were getting booked for having all these great videos or funny videos and this visibility and that, right? And I think people are going out to shows just now and they're going to see a lot of these people, but I think it's going to come to a point when they're going to go and they're going to go, this is very good, you know?
Yeah.
Because the people aren't up there because they're talented artists. They're up there because they're amazing marketers. And don't get me wrong, that's a skill. But people don't worship marketers. You know, it's the artistry that they like. And I'm wondering whether it's going to come to a point where people are going to start going... Because I'm like in my early 40s now, and I've seen, so I would say, I've seen about two or three rises and falls. Yeah. But in the 90s, it got really, really big, and then it crashed. Mm. And then towards the early 2000s, it got big, and then it crashed. Yeah. And this is what always happens, and I find what happens is when things become so commercial, it's like everything, when money becomes so involved, then sight gets lost of the artistry and what the point is. And then it gets to the point, but it gets so busy, and then people, it becomes hollow, and then it just drops. And then the people that are, like, craving that real music, they go right and they start going digging again, and the subculture goes back and it starts building up again. You know, like in the sort of mid to late 2000s, it was like the minimal that started coming in. Whereas, like, you remember when it was like, it was dance music was everywhere in the early 2000s, and it built right up. It was Radio 1, all these big events, and then it went, and it just died.
Yeah.
And then it come back as the minimal stuff, and then it slowly built up. And then, and I'm wondering if we're going to have another tank.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure, it might keep you up, it might, I don't know. I just feel that people crave, I think they can tell when they're listening to music whether there's the soul and the artistry in it, and I wonder where the spot of the divide is going to happen. And I find as well with the music industry, I don't know. It's just, it's a tricky one, mate. It's a tricky one where it's going to go. I'm not quite sure. I'm just trying to align myself with, I'm just trying to make music that I believe in and music that I enjoy making and try and ignore all of that. And that's my cards on the table. Hopefully it works out, you know?
But what was the, for you, like, I want to go a bit deeper and like go how, when you were writing music at the beginning, and where you weren't 100% happy to now, like what, how does that make you feel as an artist when you're putting music out that you can, that you're like, oh my God, I love this record. But like, does it make you feel any different to compared to what you were releasing beforehand?
Definitely. Well, before it was like at the beginning as well, I think I don't know whether I took for granted what I had and I didn't work hard enough, or maybe because I wasn't totally enjoying what I was doing, I wasn't working hard enough. But compared to when I was, when things kicked off in 2014 and it was flying, and like I wasn't in the studio that much.
Yeah.
And now you can't drag me out of it. It's like my partner and even my poor dog. I'll be like, right, let's walk. I don't want to say because she hears me, but let's go walk or whatever. And like the dog will be like, right, let's go. And she, the dog knows, like the minute I turn around, I'll just fix this. And like 2 hours later, she's lying on the floor beside me. She's like, Dad's at it again. You know, you just can't drag me away from it. And I was never like that before. I was like that when I was hungry at the beginning. And then, but I think then once you get initiated in, then you start sort of going with the flow a bit, and it was the going with the flow a bit that really made me quite miserable and uncreative and unartistic. And it got to a point where I was like, what am I going to do? Because I enjoy music, I think I'm pretty good at it, but I don't know what to do. And it was just right, just do what you love, do what you love and ignore everything else. And that's how I kind of feel about it. So definitely the main thing is you just can't drag me away from it now.
I love that. I remember at some point in my career when it was like that, and I'll be honest, it hasn't been like that for me for a long time, and I'm craving it. I'm craving to get that back. And I was literally on a call with somebody that I do work with just before we jumped on, and I was like, I just don't make, for me, like I just haven't made time to write music. Or I haven't made enough time to like give myself time to write music. And like, I do so much, which this isn't me being negative. I love everything I do, but it's like when you're touring 2-3 times a week and then you're doing podcasts, like I've got 3 podcasts to record today. And then you got to like sort everything else out. And then you also have to have a bit of a life as well. And then try and write music in between all of that. And it's really weird. I don't know if you've had this in your career at all, or in your life, like where the one thing I love to do the most is actually write music, but it actually takes the back. It's actually the least kind of the thing that I don't take enough time to do because everything, because I allow everything else to kind of take over. And it's like, I don't know what I need to do personally to do that and to be like, fuck everything else. Nothing else matters to me, really. Like the podcast doesn't matter to me as much as making music to me. The all the admin stuff, all the social media stuff, all the helping other people, all of that means fuck all if I can't write music. But for some reason, I still, in the last like 6 months, pretty much since coming out of COVID, I like still haven't made enough time for myself to make music that I'm like, wow, this is fucking amazing. I've made music and I've made records that I'm happy with. But I don't know. Have you ever had that?
Of course I've had that, but coming back to the period that I'm kind of in just now, I think, and I've been in this place before, and it becomes your everything. And it just now this is my everything. And I think it's, you've got a lot of things going on and music is really important to you, but it's like here, right? And I think there's a point where the music's there and everything else has to be about here. And you can still do everything else. And I find even when it's all I'm doing, I can still make time for other things. But it was like, it's like I used to always say to my friends, like, and I used to do like some of the one-to-ones at Scottish Music Centre and stuff like that, and people would say, and you would hear it all the time, people would always go, I've got this new synth and just going to paint the bedroom and I've got this phone. Well, as soon as I get it done, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, now you still would say to them, I'm like, look, there's always going to be stuff in the way.
Yeah.
I'm like, make tunes and paint the walls. Because you're always going to have stuff in the road. And like for me, but you know what happened? I find I've got quite a kind of obsessive personality if I'm focused on something. And I find that once I'm locked in, I'm just so locked in.
Yeah.
But it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to get yourself back in that. You do. Like, there's been a few points where I was working in the studio so much, like literally, I've been working on a tune all day, and then I go to bed. And then I'm not. This is the truth. Like, Uncaged was one of them, right? It was the first Uncaged that I'd had, and I went to sleep, and you know, I woke up because I was dreaming about it, and then I got my laptop and got my headphones, and then transferred it to my laptop because it was all bounced down, and went in the laptop and watched it to 7 o'clock in the morning. That was when my brain was at. It was like, oh, wake up, you can do more. You know, it's crazy, and the thing is, it seems to be paying off because it seems to be. People are noticing it, and it's funny because even all the music that I had, the early drum code stuff that I'm still proud of and stuff like that, and that would give my career a big instant boost, but yeah. I think that's more because of the fan base that they have. Mm-hmm. But the amount of messages and like private messages I'm getting now about the stuff that I'm doing compared to the stuff I was doing back then, this huge machine behind it. It's not even in the same vicinity. It's just miles above it. Yeah, it's just every day people, oh, blah, blah, blah. People are feeling it. They're feeling that the effort that's going in, I think.
What, do you think that's what it is?
I think so. Or maybe it's the fact that I'm just doing what I really, really want and it's coming out. I don't know.
I think when, this is my opinion on it, but I think when you're with like a huge label, like Drum Code, like, for me, it was Dirty Bird. You have an automatic fan base, which I believe every artist needs to start with. Whether that's 100 people, whether that's 10,000 people, like whether that's 100,000 people, it really does help no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of puts you in. But I think what happens from that 1,000 people that are a fan of that record label, you get 50 of those people that actually really give a fuck about you, and then
that's so true,
and then that 50 people will then be your super fans, and then from the super fans they will then go and talk to other people about you, and then you'll kind of you'll keep going. But I think
that's totally spot on. I think you've got hitting the nail on the head with that. Yeah,
because I think it's
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Let's use Drum Code for example. Like, it's a machine. It is a fucking machine. And what Adam's built is unbelievable. And I would take my hat off 100%. But you can guarantee, like, you could release a record on Drum Code. Let's just use Beatport for example. It's just a very easy thing to kind of show. Mm-hmm. You could release a record on Drum Code, and then you could release exactly the same record on your own label, right? Yeah. Even like brand new label, you don't even have a label. You put it out on your label, exactly the same record, and the Drum Code record will do well, and the one on your label won't do well. And that's purely because you've got the Drum Code label to it, right? Which is understandable. That's kind of, it's like Nike, right? Nike, you release a sneaker, and then somebody else releases.
I was just about to say that analogy. Exactly the same. I was going to say, it's like you could design the coolest fucking pair of trainers in the world and go, look at these, and people go, oh, they're amazing. And you could sell 1,000 pairs, and you just put a tick in the side, billions. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, that was the exact analogy I was thinking of.
Yeah, so I think realistically, like, as an artist, I think everybody needs that first platform. But then once you have that first platform and then you get the opportunity to go and do yourself, I think that's when you really build your true fans and your true following and people that really give a fuck about you. And whether that's 50 people, whether that's 100 people, whether that's 10,000 people, it doesn't really matter. It's just you'll find that your true fans that really care about you will support everything you do. And if they don't support every record they do, they'll tell you. And that's fine, because that's feedback, and we all need that as artists.
Yeah. That's on that note as well, that's one other thing I've kind of been trying to do as well, is I've been, so like, so how, see, I'm known for a certain sound. Recently, I've been going, I'll do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And I've been, that's what I'm saying. So I'll be doing stuff like on Uncaged at like 141 BPM. Mm. And then the next month, I'll have something on like Gregor Treasure's Breaking New Soil. And it's a completely different sound. But I love both of them. And I feel, I've just went, why is the rules? Who says you can do that and you can't do that and you need to make up another name? Who said that?
Yeah.
It's some guy once. So
there's no rules. And I think this is the thing, is this is what I've learned over the years. And it's kind of what I've done with my label. Like my label, I release records that have vocals and that are kind of more song based. And I can get away with doing that on my label. And then I'll go and do a remix for Compact that's just strict techno.
Yeah, and that's sweet that you can do that, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing, but I'll be honest, I battle with it in my head, and I struggle with it sometimes because I'm like, where do I sit as an artist? Like what lineups do I sit on? And the whole goal for me is not to be able to sit on any lineup. It's to be able to sit on every lineup because I'm just doing who I am.
Yeah.
But I think this is the where you're at, is you're growing your artist career or artist as a person, as whoever you are. Like you're growing something where it allows you to be who you want to be and not Harvey McKay, the drum code or the Needed Pains or this person. It's Harvey McKay.
Yeah. No, I think you're right, man. And I, you know, I think the one of the first places that I had that kind of freedom to do that was with Alex on Needed Pains. Because like, literally I'll say, oh, I've got something I'll need to let you hear. See if you, and he's like, give me it, I'll put it out. You don't even heard it yet.
Yeah.
He'll just be like, I love everything you do. It doesn't matter. And that was the first chase. And then it was like, oh, I like this. You know, I like this and how much stuff. I'm just going to do this from now on. But I think the thing is as well, it's like, I mean, who wants to be who they're not? Like, who wants to do something that is not them, you know?
Yeah.
The whole point of doing something that's artistic and music is so you can express yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Most people that unfortunately will have to go and do some sort of normal job, they're forced into a box, or even if it's a profession they take, to have to do lots of things that are not what they want to do. Don't get me wrong, you still have to do that in life as an artist, but not with your artistry. Hopefully you can get to express yourself and do what you want, because I think that's a really unhealthy place to be mentally, to be doing something that's not you.
Yeah, I had a call from somebody last night who I write music with or for, and kind of help with their career. And they left me like this voice message that scared the shit out of me. And they were just like, I'm done with this project because I've got so much pressure on myself externally from managers and agents telling me I need to do this and telling me I need to do that. And their career has blown up since COVID. Like before COVID, they weren't even a DJ. And it made me really sad because it's like, this person is so talented, but because of everybody else's external needs, is putting so much pressure on this one person that realistically it ruins the artistry and kind of stifens the creativity and just forces people to put stuff out because they have to do it. And the issue is I don't think many people are willing to talk about that publicly that have been through that.
Yeah,
it's either too late or it comes out 10 years down the line. And I kind of want to get people on the podcast that are willing to just be like fully honest and open about that, that process. Because I think people need to know about it. There's definitely people out there that are getting put so much pressure on from their teams that they have to release this type of music. Like, in fact, another one of my good mates, like he's, I can't go too much into detail, but like, it was in the same situation where his management just wants him to release Tech House bangers, and his management would be able to make a fucking huge career out of him if he released Tech House bangers. But
that's when the money's involved again. This is what I'm saying.
It's exactly. Like... And I think that's the issue, is like, when does it come a point where it's a business, and when does it come a point where it's artists? And this is something that I've been battling with, not in my head, but more so like, I've spoke about it many times on this podcast, is when does the industry become this? It's the issue with the music industry, is that it's music and industry, whereas it's emotions with creative people, and then you got business people, and then some of us are the same person all in one. Like, for me, I would say I'm like 50% artist, 50% business.
Yeah.
And then both of those are fighting at the same time.
Yeah.
And you're just like, fuck, what do we do?
Just get in.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always felt like, I wouldn't even be able to pluck a percentage, but don't get me wrong, I've always got the voice in the back of my head going, oh shit. You know, it's not like I'm not aware of the risks.
Yeah.
I would definitely say I'm not got a business head on me. I never have. But I've got that voice going like, you know, it's not saying to me, you better do this. It's just going, oh, I hope you're right. You know. So I get it, man. I get it. But then that bit where you're saying you've got the business name, that's probably why you're having the conflict of when you're saying when you're releasing a new label with the vocal stuff and the compact, because you've got that's your artistic side making those decisions, and then you've got the business side going, are you sure this is the right thing to do? And it's trying to keep both of them happy, I suppose, if you've got that kind of dynamic going on in your head.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I don't know, but how do you juggle it with the business and the music, or do you not? Are you strictly music, and whatever comes business?
To be honest, I really don't think about it. Not anymore. I don't anymore. I always did, and I was just miserable. Miserable.
So what was the switching point? Like, what? Where in your life
when
was it?
It wasn't working for me. I was just so unhappy, and like, I was still touring, but like, it was just like, I was just like, ugh. And I'm like, and then the pandemic happened, and it gave like a break, and it gave a chance for, well, there's not too many releases coming out, and there's no gigs at the moment. And I was like, hey, this could be a fresh palette, time to just completely go back to the drawing board and learn again. But no, I was just miserable, man. Mm. And now, as I say, it's just a completely different story. But I think that's what that's been at.
I love that. I love that. What happened with your health?
Oh, yeah, so a bit of a wild one, man. I have always had, like, sort of autoimmune problems, like wee bit of psoriasis and stuff like that, and a bit weird and wee nerve things and stuff. And then it was last year, I think, and I'd had the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, which I think saves loads of lives. I just have a very reactive immune system, right? Yeah. And lots of people do. And it was just a bit... So basically, anyway, what happened was I got the vaccine, and about a week later, I was out working with one of my friends, and I was talking away, and do you know that way, like, I completely forgot what I was saying, but it was like the road just disintegrated from under me. I'm like, whoa. I'm like, didn't think anything of it.
Yeah.
I was like, well, that was weird. But anyway, moved on, and then it happened again and again, and it gets more and more and more. And then it got to the point where I could, like, I was sitting, I was talking to my girlfriend, And I was like, right, what was I saying? What? And she's got, you need to go to the doctor. I couldn't even hold a conversation. And then I started having really strange sensations in my brain. Like my brain, I could feel my brain in my skull.
Jesus.
Yeah. And then, and whenever the confusion, and I was starting to struggle to find words, and that would be, that would coincide with me. The more I could feel my brain in my skull, the more I would struggle with words. And that went on for quite a while. And it got to the point, and like, as you can tell from this podcast, I don't struggle to communicate or chat. Right? And I was so bad, but my brain was so bad, I was scared to open my mouth because I couldn't find the words.
Really?
My vocabulary just disintegrated. I would go to speaking, like, words would just be gone. I'm like, so what? And then like 5 hours later, I'd be driving and roundabout, they'd pop back in. And then...
That's weird.
And then... I started, and I didn't tell him at the time, probably should have, but it's gone now, so it's fine. But sometimes I would be going home, and I'd go round and round about like 3 or 4 times, I'd get lost. I'm like, where am I going? It was like, the way that started, it was like, do you know the way when you're working on a computer, you're running loads of things, and like, you get loads of, your CPU's clipping, and you go like that to do something, and everything just stops right?
Yeah.
That's what it was like. It was like the processing part of my brain was just kaput. When I could maybe talk, but when I would try and access something, it would go, and it would just freeze up.
Wow.
And it did that for a while, and then I think it was towards when I got the second one, because I didn't realise any of this was going on at the time. And then I started going to, when I was going to the gym, I went to type my code in my hand, it's like it was drunk, and I'm like trying to type my code in, and then that went to water, like got outside of my eye, and then I had to be rushed up hospital lots of times. They thought I was having a stroke and all sorts, and it just went, mate, see, at Christmas there, I was really, really ill. Like, I mean, one of the reasons I wrote so much music over that period of time was because, like, I would have good days and bad days, but I wasn't sure what way it was going.
Yeah.
It was going down quick, mate. And, like, to give you an idea, there was one day I couldn't add 7 and 6. I was trying to count something. I couldn't add 7 and 6.
Jesus.
My brain just wasn't working. And it was, mate, it was almost a wee bit emotional talking about it yourself. Mm. It's one of the most terrifying things ever. And I was going to all the neurologists, and none of them knew what it was. And so thought it was this, thought it was MS. And then what happened was I got my booster letter in, and I thought, I'd always said, oh, I'm not getting the thing just in case or whatever, the next one. And I typed it in. Post-vaccine, neurological, BBC, boom, like word for word, exactly what happened to me. I'm like, oh my God, you know? And I went in and spoke to the neurologist, and by this point in time, they're aware of it.
Yeah.
And I spoke to him about it, and he was saying that, yeah, we're seeing a lot of things, and we don't understand what's going on. So that's what happened, man. It was just, I still get little bits. So there's maybe once or twice I've been talking to you, I've been talking, and it's maybe just drifted away and it's come back. But I'm at a period
what
now.
Is it? What is it though?
Basically, it's like inflammation in the brain, in the brainstem, and it's just so, and it just it basically is causing all sorts of neurological problems. And I think people are getting it from COVID as well.
Yeah.
I had COVID twice after that, and I was absolutely fine. But as I say, that's where it's been, mate. And it was absolutely terrifying. See, now it's like, just now, one side of me feels different from the other one. It's like a tiny bit. At the very worst, it was like somebody was squeezing one side of my body, and as time goes on, it's just like they're letting go.
That's so weird.
Dude, it was like, at one point, I'm like, what is going on?
And there's no cures to this. There's no, like...
Mate, as time goes on, it's fading and fading and fading and fading. Like, I would never be able to do this podcast if I was just the way I was.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. The longer the time goes on, it starts fading. And I feel I'm on the mend now, thankfully. But that's kind of what was happening, mate. And I was kind of keeping it quite private, but it was a really tricky time, mate. But I think that was one of the things that inspired me to work so hard.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I was going like that, and I'm going, I didn't know whether it was going to be a goner, because nobody knew what it was. And then it just started easing up, and then I found the article, and I'm like, wow. I mean, imagine I didn't find it. I jumped in. So, but I've got my letter from the doctor and all that saying no more. And
so, are you allergic to something in the vaccine?
Well, what it is, well, basically what it is it's like people that have got autoimmune problems or immune issues, right? What happens is when you get it, what they think happens is they think that your immune system overreacts to, and then starts attacking your own body. So my immune system's done this my whole life. Here's the weird thing, right? Before I found that article, I kept saying to my mum, right? Because my mum used to be a nurse, I kept saying, my immune system has went bananas. I don't know what it is, but my immune system's went nuts and it's attacked me. Something has just went like that and it's went poof and went mental. And then that's exactly what it was saying. And as soon as I said that, I showed it to my mum, she went, you bloody said that. And I'm like, because I knew it. It was just like my immune system suddenly went, I don't like you, and just started attacking me. Jeez. And that's what it was. So,
fuck, wild. Man.
That's, I know, mate. I know.
It's mental, isn't it?
It's, mate, it's scary, man. It's scary. But it's just one of these things, mate. I just feel that I'm glad I'm kind of outside the other side of it, and just recovering.
How long were you in hospital for?
Well, I wasn't in as in admitted. I was rushed up loads of times. I must have been in hospital like every 2 or 3 weeks, just like Jesus. For like a whole year. I'd be in and then it would be like, and I'm like, I'm going numb and my eyes start rolling. And I'd phone up the doctor, they'd be like, go to hospital. And I'd get up, they'd take all my bloods and be like, you're fine. Send you back out. They'd do loads of MRIs, they're like, you're okay. And I'm like, oh, I don't feel okay. You know? man, pretty wild stuff.
It's mad. Yeah, I've heard a bunch of stories of like friends and the like long COVID and kind of the effects of what a lot of it's done. It's mental. How I think it's just amazing how different we all are as human beings.
Yes.
And how every single one of our bodies reacts differently to everything we put in it. Like, and I think that's, it's kind of, there's like correlations between what we do as a living and our bodies, right? It's like we're all different. We all like to do different things. We all respond differently to different things, and we all act differently to different things. And I think this is the thing, is like you have to treat everybody individually.
Yes.
And we have to treat ourselves as individuals. And we have to look at what makes us happy and what makes us fit and healthy and what makes us feel good and things like that.
Yeah.
And not generalize massively, because it goes back to the music. If you go write what everyone else is writing, yeah, you might become more successful, but you might not be happy.
Yeah.
You eat steak every day, it might make you happy. Some people, it might make you feel like shit.
Yeah, well, this is the thing as well. And like, whatever group you're in or whatever you believe with the diet thing is as well, it's like people that say carnivore's the best way, people that say vegan's the best way, people say that pescatarian, there's no such best way. No. It's whatever works for you, because we've all got different genetics. People are from different places all over the world where there's different things available. Like, some people will eat, like, see, one of the things is I used to have a thing called psoriatic arthritis, right? So, and it's like you get psoriasis, but then in a very rare cases, it starts attacking your joints. And I ended up really bad with that. I'm seeing my immune system playing up, right? Yeah. And it started attacking my toe, and then I'd wake up. It's like, all my connective tissue was all inflamed, and I had to go on some really heavy medication. And one of my really good friends, Scott, he'd seen this documentary, right? And it was a juicing documentary, right? Now, I wouldn't say now that I know a bit enough about it that it's the right way to go, right? But basically what this thing was, it was an exclusion. So it was like, cut out all crap. All you're having is 70% veg, 20% fruit or whatever it is, and you're having all that and you're not eating. And I did that for 6 weeks. I didn't eat for 6 weeks, right? And did that, and I felt like the first week I tried it, at the end I was like, I'll try it for a week. And then towards the end of the week, I was like, I'm choked for a curry and whatever, right? And I woke up on the Saturday, right? When I woke up on Saturday, I was like, whoa, I feel different.
Yeah.
I feel right. And I kept going and I did it, right? But then I still wasn't 100%. But then I slowly started going, right, okay, what I'm eating, my lifestyle. I slowly started changing it. Now, there was on two medications, one called methotrexate, it's a mild form of chemotherapy that lowers the immune system, one called Humira, which, holy shit, that's dangerous stuff. But that brought it right down. And then once I tried the juicing diet, managed to come off them. And then basically what I'd figured out for me is just clean as anything. If it grows out the ground or walks about, that's the way to go for me. Mm-hmm. And if it's in a packet with a sauce or something, man's the go at it.
Yeah.
And for me, having an immune system, that's probably why I reacted to the vaccine. My body doesn't like things it doesn't know what they are, right? Mm. So what's that, right? You know? So, and I found when I ate just clean, nice clean vegetables and a nice slab of meat and kept everything clean, it went away. Now, this is a disease that's meant to be with you for life and damage a new joint every 2 years.
Yeah.
I stopped it dead in its tracks after two or 3 years of figuring it out. And when I was up the other day, talking to the doctor about something else, and it was up in the hospital, and she was looking through my notes, and she went, oh, I see you. You get psoriatic arthritis? No, not anymore. She went, what do you mean, not anymore? I went, I don't have it. She went, and the nurse looked at each other, and she went, you don't take meds? I went, no. And I told them, and you could see they were astonished, and they went, what about red meat? I says, well, see, to be honest, I love my vegetables, but see, if I just eat red meat only, I find that's actually the best. Because see, here's the thing, see, when I say I get rid of it, it will always be there if I misbehave for a while.
Of course, of course.
See, if I start eating normal food, that'll creep back in. So it's not gone, it's just my immune system's at bay by eating clean. But you could see they were astonished. They were like, what do you mean you get rid of it? Mm. And I'm like, oh, it's just eating clean. Yeah. And that's the thing that works for me, you know?
It's pretty amazing, though, isn't it? Because how much control you can have over your body. But I was talking to this about to a friend the other day, but it's like the amount of shit we put in our bodies every day, right?
Especially when you travel, it's so hard, isn't it?
Right.
You're so bored.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what can I do for the next 6 hours of one connection?
Well, for me, it's not like I don't, sometimes I eat when I'm bored, but for me, it's like, I'm like this person where it's just easy to go get something sweet, like just a snack.
Right.
And then rather than eat like a full-on meal at an airport, because the full-on meal at the airport is going to be fucking expensive and it's not going to be that, it's not going to be that good.
No.
So I'm like, I'll eat like a snacks or something here and there, and it's not healthy. But like, do you have a meal prep when you're traveling?
No, I don't, but it's quite a good idea. Like, see, you're talking about just with the airports. I was like in Stansted, was it last weekend? And like, Stansted's just a riot at the moment. Because apparently I was asking again, well, why are you so busy? And he said, oh, they'd lost the contract, the people who do the restaurants, and now there's only two places, at Lichoka. So I was like, right, okay. And I'm looking at the menu, I'm like, heavens, about like 20 quid for like a salad or something. Yeah. I'm like, and I seen cheesy chips, I thought, not healthy, but not expensive. I'll treat myself. So I goes up, and the guy's like, we don't have the cheese. I'm like, oh, give me the chips. So he gave me the chips, and I swear to God, the chips were £6, right? And he brought them out, and there was about 7 chips.
Oh, like, no.
Chunky ones. And I sat down beside a couple, and I was like that. And he looked at the chips, I was like, fuck it. And I pointed it, and they burst out laughing. I went, they were £6. And they went, a pound a chip. You know what I'm saying? Oh dear.
Yes, airport food's terrible. Like even if you're like in the lounges or something like that, it's terrible food. It's just cheap food because they're just giving it away for free, which I get.
Well, you've not got any other options, have you? They know they've got you locked in.
Yeah.
It's like in Glasgow, I think it was Glasgow or Edinburgh Airport at one time. Obviously, do you know Greg's?
Yeah.
The
baker's
Greg's? Yeah. I mean, Greg's steak making a pie, right? So it's like a little place that does shops for anybody that's not from here, right? And it will do like pastries and steak bakes and pies or whatever. And they had opened a shop in the airport.
Wow.
And like, I walked in, I'm like, Greg's brilliant. And it's like, same prices. And they were only there like for like 6 months because the airport said to them, nah, you need to raise your prices. And Greg's went, fuck you then. And they just left. But they were like, because then people had a cheap option that they knew they would enjoy. So all the other end, they're going, I'm not spending £20 on chips and eggs when I can get a wee pie and a can of juice for like a quid. You know what I mean?
This is why everyone loves Greggs in the UK. It's like the best fucking place ever. You just know what you're going to get.
Exactly, mate. How can you get a steak bake wrong? You know what I mean?
Literally. I was in Amsterdam airport the other day, and I don't know if you knew about the rigmarole of Amsterdam airport recently, but they've had like 6 hour waits at the security because they've been on strike. The promoters told me to go to the airport really early. So right. I got to the airport 4 hours before my flight to expect that I'm going to be in security lines for fucking hours.
Right.
I got in through within 30 seconds. It was the quickest security of my life.
You're just saying that to me. I just booked flights and I've got a 2 hour connection before. I'm like,
typical. No, you'll be fine now. They've employed a load of new people. Anyway, my flight got delayed by 2.5 hours as well. So I was at the airport for fucking hours. Yeah. And I was really craving food. But it was got to the point where where everything was closing because it was nighttime.
Right.
I don't eat McDonald's. I haven't had a McDonald's in probably 6-7 years. And right. The only thing I'll eat from there or drink from there is their milkshake. Because I'm like,
their milkshakes are vanilla milkshakes are out of this world. Bang.
They're banging, aren't they?
They're immense. But you know, as you're drinking it, you're just going...
Yeah, literally just getting fat. My veins are just filling up with grease. And I walked up to McDonald's and was like, okay, I'm going to psych myself up and go to McDonald's. And the line was no joke, an hour long just to get to the order. So I was like, fuck that. It saved my ass, man. But yeah,
saved you from the crash.
Literally, it's so good though. I'm a milkshake whore as well. I would literally just, if I didn't care about my health, I would drink a milkshake every day.
Mate, they're so tasty, man. They're amazing. Mm. It's see, whenever I'm over at Amsterdam, it's one of the first things I'll do. I'll go out and go to one of the cafes and get a smoke and get a nice vanilla milkshake. Yeah. It's just outstanding, man.
They're so good. It's just Have you ever been to a Shake Shack?
No, I haven't, no.
Oh, mate, when you're in... I think there's one in London, but when you're in...
Be careful what vices you introduce me to. It's is this meat going to be ruined?
So Shake Shack is they cook everything fresh. It's like Five Guys to a certain extent. So it's everything's fresh. So it's not it's still not good for you, but it's not as bad for you as pre-made McDonald's, Burger King, KFC shit. But I'd say it's In-N-Out, Five Guys, Shake Shack. They're all kind of very similar. People are going to hate me for saying that as well. It's territory wars. It's gang wars in America with what's better. In-N-Out.
Really?
Yeah, mate, it's ridiculous. Shake Shack is better though. But Shake, literally. But Shake Shack do milkshakes and... No word of a lie. They're crack cocaine. Word of a lie. It's the most addictive flavor milkshakes ever. And you're just this is so good. How possibly can they make it so good? But every time you drink it afterwards, you're like, yeah, I shouldn't have had that.
that's just the thick syrupy sugars just... bleeding into your veins and literally your
literally yeah it never makes you feel good after, but those 10 minutes of drinking it is heaven. It's there's nothing better than it. You can have the most beautiful girl in front of you and I'd still rather have the milkshake.
Six before sex.
No, you never want a milkshake before sex, do you? Let's be honest.
Maybe after.
Yeah, right. Have it after. It's instead of having a cigarette, have a milkshake.
Yeah.
Back on. I used to drink, I still do sometimes, the Nesquik powder?
Right.
Have you ever had that? The Nesquik chocolate powder?
No, but when I was a kid, yeah.
Mate, I still have some in the cupboard now.
Yeah, you would just add with the milk and it'd be the really kind of watery.
Oh, mate, it's amazing.
It'd be the milkshakes you would buy in school in a cat.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. I love that shit. And now instead of that, I just use protein shake just because it makes me feel a little
healthier.
You know
what? Oh, see, the thing is, some of the protein shakes as well, some of the flavours are dynamite. There was one I got, and it was chocolate chip with mint or something like that. And see that in the fridge? Oh, but you know what? I would have... it would be chocolate chip mint, and then I would buy like, say like, want like a really dark chocolate. Well, not a dark chocolate, but a really deep chocolate flavored milk already, and then add that with the mint. And ice. Tremendous, man.
I tell you what. Yeah, I've gone through a few protein powders over the years, and recently I've got into Huel.
Yeah, all right.
And I don't drink their like pre-made stuff. I got their protein powder. If anyone from Huel's listening, you're more than welcome to sponsor this podcast. But their protein powders taste so good. And the nutrition in them is amazing. Like, it's not just protein. You're getting so many other nutrients, which other protein powders aren't putting in. A lot of other protein powders just fill it up with shit. Whereas the nutrition side of the Huel stuff, I'm like, how can you get it tasting so good and also being
because usually good healthy for you? Stuff and taste doesn't really go together.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like when you're drinking your vitamins in your morning and it just tastes like fucking paracetamol. It's gross. But yeah, what have you got coming out in over the next couple of months?
Cocoon's out next 17th. Nice. So not tomorrow, but then the Friday after.
So
that's a big one for me.
When will this podcast come out? This podcast is coming out week after, so it'll be out by then.
Right, okay. So check it out.
So listen, it's out.
Buy it now.
Yeah, I've got like a bunch
of stores now, kids.
I'm doing like a load of podcast recording this week because I've actually got writing sessions next week and the week after.
Right.
In London, where I'm just writing. I've like booked out 2 weeks of my calendar and just writing music.
Cool.
So yeah, man. Dude, thanks so much for coming on.
No problem, mate. Pleasure.
It's been great, and I'd love to do this in person. I feel like we'd have
I'd love to.
Hopefully we catch up at some point this year. But keep safe, and how can people follow you, and how can people listen to your new album and everything like that?
I'm mostly active just on Instagram, and my album's on Spotify or YouTube, whatever's easiest. But you catch most of the stuff, everything that's come out's on Spotify if you've got that, or on YouTube, man.
Cool. Harvey, love you, dude. Keep safe. See you soon.
You too, bro. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate. See you soon. Stay on. And that is a wrap. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks, Harvey, for coming on. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, hit share, send it to your mates, send it to your parents. Tell everyone about it. It's the only way the podcast keeps going. Love you all. See you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.